So let's talk about screwworm flies.
No more.
I got such a great response last week.
No.
Part two, baby.
No. No. You can eat this episode and not be afraid of throwing it up.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Yeah, it'll be all right. What
yeah,
is
thanks
this?
Thanks a lot, Shaden.
You're welcome. This is Jar, Just a Ride.
Just Ride number 91.
91.
I got the ba-boo-ba-ba. I got the poo-ba. Yep. I am the pee-ba. And we got a special guest today.
Yes, we do.
Mr. Vioba?
The Crewba.
The Crewba.
The Crewba.
There you go. I like that.
This is our buddy Justin Vio. And like we said this week, we're going to introduce you to him. And he's got a life that he lived. And we're going to share it with you guys.
Yeah.
And so lots of stuff to talk about. We've got a long history so far. Although we don't know each other. Super great. This is kind of fun. We'll get to interrogate you, if you will. Can we get another light on his head?
Yeah.
That should be good.
Close up. Camera two.
Shit, right. I forgot the thumb screws.
Yeah, yeah. So where to start? Let's see. So you're a business owner.
Yeah, business owner. And 11 years now.
11 years.
Yeah.
Here in the Northwest.
Yep.
Yeah, and you're not from the Northwest, right?
I have a connection here. I was born on Fairchild Air Force Base.
Oh, okay.
And, yeah, Dad, we're from New Mexico, and when I was 2 years old, we moved back to New Mexico and I've never been back since.
Huh. Mm. Well, this is an important question for our Dave and Angus show. While in Mexico, did you ever go to West Hammond? and did you ever come across like a vortex situation of any kind?
No, well, no? It's New Mexico, so.
Yeah?
Yeah, no, there's no vortex.
No West Hammond and vortex, okay. I just had to check because Dave and Angus came across a vortex, a V-tex as they like to call it, and yeah. It messed with them a little bit in New Mexico.
Well, there's several tens of thousands of other people from New Mexico. The quest continues.
Yeah, like
we'll add your response to our sample group.
There's not that many people in New Mexico. All right, so Fairchild. So you're an Air Force brat.
Well, I wouldn't say brat. That was it. Just Vietnam era. Dad did four terms, and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
He was in Guam when I was born, and when my middle brother was born, we were both born up here.
Wow.
And 4 years later, he got out.
So. Yeah. Have you lived anywhere else in the country?
A little bit in Missouri for college, a couple of years.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Missouri.
I didn't live there long enough to be allowed to call it Missouri. Missouri. That's for the locals. Yeah.
That's funny because like when I went to Texas for college, straight transplant from Canada, it wasn't like nobody gate kept it. They were all offended that I wasn't picking up the accent quicker. They're like, we'll get you speaking Texan in no time, son. And I was like, I bet you won't.
What's so funny, my uncle used to live in Missouri. And for like 20 years. And he called it Misery.
Misery.
Yeah.
That's what he called it.
The two major cities, Kansas City and St. Louis, they both look like, if you look at the map, that they're trying to get the fuck out of the state. Both sides. They're just one of them's named after another state, for Christ's sake. So
yeah, and they both bled across the border.
Yeah.
Because right? There's a Kansas City.
They're like, we're just going to stay over here where the taxes Illinois. Are different. Yeah, like that
they're
better.
Scooting their asses over, way over on the seat, almost falling off. They're one cheek on, one cheek off inside Missouri.
They're doing the Midwest thing. Let me just scooch right in here. Just
get a little scooch
right by it.
So 12 years running business, right? 11, 12 years here.
I just, 11th year now, April.
Actually, what got,
so you must hate it.
Yeah.
I had a 5-year plan going into it and I like it that much. I'm still here.
You doubled it. You're like, okay, let's do it. Let's double it.
Yeah.
So what got you into what made you want to own a bar or a restaurant?
Yeah. You know, working basically not an office job, but I was working for somebody else, working for the government in a little small town, you know, where I was from in New Mexico. And I always knew that I wanted to do something for myself. You know, I started way back in high school. I got like a whole file full and then later on a computer full of ideas. I wanted to do like a bookstore when I was in college because I was so pissed off that
you
sell your books back to the bookstore there at the college for like $2 and then it's like $80.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is semester. A good little grift they got
so
going on.
I was like,
I'm
going to do a bookstore. Yeah. You know, and of course, at that age, you don't have the funds, you don't have the knowledge, you don't have the ability really.
And nobody's about to invest in you either.
It's exactly. Like, oh, yeah. I had always been kind of on the architectural side of things. Like, I had this idea for a movie theater that I wanted to call the Pentaplex, you know, so it was five, and it was arranged, you know, in a pentagon kind of thing. Then if you wanted to go really big, you could just stack them, right?
Dude, yeah.
Up on top.
Oh, yeah.
And then you could draw, like, lines to each corner and summon demons if the theater thing didn't work out.
They don't want to be in theater C around 12:30.
The name is a double entendre. Yeah. The Pentaplex and... The Pentaplex.
Yeah. But yeah, so I always had that urge to do something for myself.
That's awesome. I had an idea like that when I was first starting music. I was like, I saw a couple venues. I went to Alaska later, but I heard about it, where it had 9 venues, this place called Chilku Charlie's, which I got to play later. But it was like 9 venues in one venue. Yeah. And I thought about, wow, it would be cool to make a venue mall where you have stuff going on every night, but it's different. Some of the stores are open, some are closed. And I looked around the country and there was a couple. And then I looked at how much it would cost. And I was like, well, I don't know anybody that's going to give me that. Yeah. So that's going to be tough.
Yeah.
So then I started promoting shows, thinking, man, if I just promote enough shows, I'll get that $4 billion so I can get that shovel in the ground to get stuff going. That didn't work out, though. I don't know you guys noticed that. You might have noticed that. But anyway.
It's becoming more and more apparent.
So what was the opportunity for Cruisers? How did it become on your radar? Because it existed before you.
It did, yeah. So it's been around since 2002, essentially. Kind of in its current form since 2005. But I had a little burger joint in New Mexico. I did that for 5 years. Very successful and did really well. A little small eight.
Got
table.
You confident, didn't you? I can fucking, I'm going to own a fucking car lot.
Yeah, but I, you know, I'd always been around bikes, motorcycles. I'd always been, you know, around bars.
Right. Happens.
And I thought, it'd be cool to own a biker bar, right? Biker friendly bar. And I was tired of slinging burgers. That's what I did at a little burger joint. And I thought, man, it's going to be much easier just to open up a Bud Light. Uh-huh. Than it is to sling food over a hot grill all day.
Uh-huh. On paper, that sounds right.
It sounds perfect, yeah. So I actually did an internet search for biker-friendly bars for sale, and Cruisers up here was one of the few where I could own everything, like the real estate, everything.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of places were available. It was like you had to lease a building. Mm-hmm. Looked in Portland. I looked all over the country, Midwest, Arizona, California, Oregon.
But you're ready to just go anywhere.
I was going
to
go anywhere.
That's really cool.
Anywhere. Well, the biggest reason for that was New Mexico, the way their liquor license are structured.
It's not like Utah,
It's worse. It's probably the most regulated in the whole country because they don't issue, at least at the time, they didn't issue any more liquor licenses. You had to buy an existing one.
From my research that we did on the David Nangus show about New Mexico, it has one of the largest drinking and driving problems in the country.
It's probably one of the reasons they've done that. Yeah. But just to, because one of the local bars was like available to buy, but just for the license was about $700,000.
Jeez.
Just to get your license. Then you had to buy the business. Then you had to buy the building.
That sounds like how it is to get a gaming license in certain states where they're like, oh, we're only allowed to have 4 casinos in this county.
Yeah.
So one of them goes under or sells to you, you're not even allowed to get your gaming license. And then when you do, it's hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The government's kind of like, we've got this grift handled. You're going to have to either play with us or go fucking fuck off and find your own grift. Maybe in Antarctica. I don't know. There's other places you can go.
Boy, I haven't heard the term gaming license in decades. When I was in my early 20s, I lived in Colorado and with my daughter, and I had to get my gaming license in order to work in a casino. Not own it, could just work in the casino. And so I was actually bartending, and then I shifted to cocktail, and I had to have a gaming license, so I actually had to wear my license around my neck and on a lanyard, had to get fingerprinted and all this shit.
Government makes it so it's very
walk
official.
Into and actually work for a casino.
That's so weird.
Ridiculous job, by the way.
Was it?
Almost killed me.
Really?
Almost killed me.
I've heard stories of me,
it was bad.
That seems like another one where it's like, well, just, they don't know math, so that you just take their money. Seems like a good business. Very few casinos go out.
The government makes it very easy to become anti-establishment in a hurry.
Yeah, they do.
If you're paying attention, yeah.
Like,
for sure.
This is how we do business. They're like, oh, that's terrible and immoral.
All right. I know, right?
I don't want to be part of that. So you saw the building online then?
The listing online.
Okay.
Yeah.
when you first saw the building, were you like, yeah, that's exactly what I was anticipating?
Well, was I was like, man, you can't get any more biker friendly than what Cruiser. I mean, you ride a motorcycle right through the, you know, the middle of the bar. And I was like, man, that is really cool. So yeah, I flew, contacted the realtor that had a listing and arranged to come out in January that year, 2013. Met with the owners, and by April we had struck a deal.
Nice.
So came out April 2013.
How much?
On 420, actually.
Nice. In Idaho. So you get arrested just saying it like that. So how much work had to go into it before you guys opened the door? Was it a just get the key and
it was almost ready? It was almost turnkey. Yeah. The the previous owners were real helpful as far as, I mean, she had like a whole notebook with a scheduling and stuff like that. You know, I just wanted to do things, kind of make it unique to us, you know, so didn't do everything by the book that she had given, but she was very helpful as far as like, cause I took over right at the opening of the season, the Thunder Thursday season. I mean, that was like the first day that we had it. And so it was just like a balls to the wall right away, you know, but so it's kind of turnkey. And then what I've done is on the music side, you know, it was a small, you guys have played there. It was a small little stage where you could maybe fit the drums and maybe a couple other people. And then like somebody had to stand on the floor.
That thing has evolved quite a bit. And so now one of the biggest stages.
Our band, we just crammed all of us in there and like hit each other.
Yeah,
while
just
we were
bounce
playing
on each other. So yeah, even though it was turnkey. Yeah. You know, and it's, you know, if the the biker stuff is super seasonal, you know, we're busy from end of April till like end of September, and other than that, the winters are dead.
Then you
we're
be
dead,
creative.
You know? So we had to do other things in order to make it work. And music is the way it went.
Why? I mean, it had a stage and it had a sound. And
it didn't have sound or anything.
It had nothing.
Yeah,
okay.
It had nothing. It just had that little stage. There was no PA there or anything. So all that you see there now, the house PA, the big stage, the drop down stage, that's all stuff that I've done to give more places to play, or more, you know, people another place to play.
It's funny that, you know, there aren't many venues left in this area, very few, so you kind of put yourself in a situation where you probably get a lot cooler shows.
And that's kind of describing ourselves now as a multi-genre venue, you know, because we're not, we got the country bar next to us,
right?
We're the country bar, you know, and
it is the country bar.
It is the
region.
Country
yeah,
bar
absolutely.
Yeah, now and so there's kind of challenges by not having that, by not having a label.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not the classic rock bar or, you know.
Right.
So I do different things. But I think right now country is kind of king. You know, it's like everything that Nashville North next to us touches is like gold. They sell out shows like in 9 minutes as soon as the tickets are released.
Yeah. It's wild. Even at the Knitting Factory, I saw, like, I go to, you know, metal shows and rock shows there. It's what I'm into, and some of them pack out, but then I see footage from when country artists roll through the Knitting Factory, and
or EDM.
It's like people climbing the fucking walls. It's so packed.
Yeah,
I was like, whoa,
it's awesome.
So there is, yeah, there's that challenge, not being, you know, people can't say, hey, I want to go see, you know, Lynyrd Skynyrd cover band, you know, let's go to Cruisers on Friday night, because we're not like that.
Yeah.
We might have totally something. We might have rap. We might have anything.
We guess have a lot of original artists go through there.
A lot
too.
Of original. That's kind of what we focus on.
Yeah.
Is the original.
And more touring, it seems. Like a lot more.
It's getting more. Yeah, we're up on the map. You know, I get hit up all the time now by
the labels.
Either
and
the labels or, you know, agents and even some of the artists themselves. So it's all the time. A lot of them, you know, just logistically doesn't make sense. But we're definitely up there as one of the stops.
Well, the Northwest sucks for touring so much. Go ahead, sorry.
Oh, no, that's right. When you've expanded your stage, your lights, and your sound, with specifically with the location being right on the edge between two states, and additionally the parking situation, all of that really adds to regional and national touring bands being able to pull through and play a show that night. Yeah. So you've really set yourself into a nice little situation where you can host these shows.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's kind of been incidental to what we thought. You know, I just wanted to have, I like sound, you know, and, you know, I did a sound system in my truck because I just like, you know, I'm tired of little AM, FM, whatever, you know. Well, so I've always liked the sound, and I just like, man, let's go big, let's go big, you know, let's make it sound better, you know.
Well, a lot of these national acts require specifics on stage size and lighting and the sound itself. And how much sound can be pushed through your system. So you've really set yourself up well. I noticed that last year, the year before, after you had built the sound guy's loft.
Oh, the loft, yeah.
Yes.
Eric.
Yeah, yeah. That was rad, getting that up off sound the floor, made it up by the ceiling. It's pretty, I mean, it's a really cool idea.
Yeah, and we did that for floor space because as we were getting kind of the bigger bands or especially like the festivals, you know, we'll have multiple bands on the same day or the same week, you know, 18 bands on a weekend. We needed more floor space. Mm-hmm. And there used to be, I don't know, you guys remember, you guys should remember the buddy bar that went right down the middle.
Yeah.
You know, and that's where I had the sound booth and stuff. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we took all of that out and then, threw the sound gnome up in the loft and it's because we need more floor space. Mm-hmm. So now we can actually, if I move the furniture, all the tables and stools outside and we do a little fenced off food court outside, everything outside, I can do 300 people standing room only inside.
Beautiful.
That's pretty cool. So that's a cool setup.
Obviously that's a summertime
thing. That increased
thing,
your cap from 176 to 300?
I like as is with all everything set up, I can do 120, about half seating and then the rest standing room only. But yeah, by moving everything outside, 300 is actually, we could probably do more than that.
With
the doors open and flowing through back in and out.
Prior to removing the buddy bar, what was your cap?
Before that, we had pool tables on the other side.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
We had two pool tables.
Right. Yeah.
And then, so I could seat like 45 people.
Okay.
Mm. You know?
Yeah.
Well, let's describe cruisers for people.
Yeah.
Like one of the coolest parts is definitely the road that goes through it. That's
Cruisers Boulevard. Yeah. If you look on like your Google Maps doesn't show it, but the Apple Maps or iPhone Maps or whatever, it'll actually show the road with the one-way arrow going through the bar. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's basically
when you're
just
playing acoustic guitar, isn't your favorite part of the whole thing? You're like, here's one to wall. I love the sign though. If you burn out, You gotta pay
the rent. That's kind of been a neglected rule over the last 4 or 5 years.
I noticed that.
Nobody was chasing
that guy down that would come
We kind of, I probably started the bad habit about
did you ever collect on anybody for that?
No. Yeah, it was just a hollow warning. Yeah. But it's a big pole barn. Cruisers is like 20 or about 40 by 80, I think. Mm-hmm. A big pole barn. Garage doors on each end, road that runs through the parking lot's painted like a road from Celtics, from the main road, and it just goes right on through.
It's really cool because it's set up to where you can have outdoor festival and the indoor venue going at the same time. We've seen you do a bunch of those, and those are always a blast. It's fun to be a part of those as a band. You're like, cool, this might take off, this might be a thing that we want to do every year.
Yeah, one of my favorites, talking about having things going on at the same time, was when you're doing during our rally that you broke for Sturgis rally that we do. I had like a country band going inside on the inside stage, and out in the beer garden in the back we had the extra stage and sound system brought in, and we had a hip-hop show going on, and nothing bled over at all. It's just kind of, the acoustics in that building are great, just naturally, and outside nothing was bleeding over. Rap thumping on the the backyard and country going on in the inside.
That's cool.
It was really cool.
And that's not even what the parking lot stage is going.
That's not the parking lot stage. Yeah, so that's our big option. We can do like 1,500 outside in the parking lot.
And you guys have done that plenty
of
times.
We have, yeah.
So talk about Thunder Thursdays. That's, in case people don't know what that is.
Yeah.
What's the thunder mean?
Well, thunder, you know, the roar of motorcycles. Sometimes it's actual thunderstorms, which kind of sucks, you know.
Yeah, fair enough.
But yeah, that's what it's a play on, the roar of motorcycles. So it's the weekly bike night.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And we do that at the end of April, coming up here in a couple of weeks.
We have a couple bikers in this area, don't we?
There's a few, you know.
Because that place, you'll know when it's Thunder Thursday.
Yeah, usually our kickoff, if it's good weather, it's all weather dependent, but usually on that first one, I mean, I've seen as many as 500 bikes come in.
I went out for a while to the, was it Frosty Buns run?
Frosty Buns,
yeah. Which you guys were the destination for on that one, right? Like you were at the end of the run.
Yeah, we were the stop. We were the host bar. Yeah.
By the time I showed up there, there was a shitload of people there.
Yeah, we had 425 bikes signed up on the registration, but there was we were over 500 because not everybody signs up.
Right.
And it was like 70 degrees that day, which is great. St. Patty's Day. Yeah, we had already postponed once because the weather was bad. So yeah.
It's not even close to Frosty Buns.
No, that's it was not frosty at all.
Thawed buns.
Yeah.
So yeah. This.
I was outside standing in the parking lot waiting for a taco in like a flannel and black jeans, and I was like, oh my God, it's hot. What the hell? Yeah.
It's not supposed to be. So it's in State Line, Idaho. And State Line is a unique little place in the world.
State Line Village, baby.
Yeah. We go, State Line Village Village of State Line actually is the official incorporated name.
Okay. But
yeah, incorporated since 1947. Population, the last census was like around 39. I sit on the city council.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So.
And you keep it a village for tax purposes, or
no? It's actual in the municipal code that it's a size dependent, population dependent. So you're a village up in. I don't know what the numbers are.
So you need like 13 more to be a town.
I think it's a lot more than that, actually.
Well, I was curious. What is the population of?
I think now, it's probably maybe 41.
Yeah. That's what I thought.
Yeah. The population for a village is more than you think. Like, mm-hmm. the town I grew up in Canada was like 1,200 people.
Yeah, it goes
something
like that.
If you went like down the valley, and it was a village, and they were like, yeah, we're going to be a village for a long, long time. Mm-hmm.
See, what I learned is that to get a dot on the map, you have to have a McDonald's. And then if you're a big city and you get a star, that means you have 12 McDonald's or more. So is there a McDonald's in the state?
I heard the same, but I heard Subway instead.
Is it Subway? Oh, man, that's inflation. Well, we're slipping.
It's difficult to tell the difference between State Line and Post Falls.
No, it absolutely bleeds. Is. It's Post Falls is like from Cruisers. Post Falls is across the street.
Yeah, I was going to say,
and
yeah.
And we're State Line on the north side, and it's just a little pie wedge that starts like from east to west. It's mm-hmm. a little pie that goes south to east and Annie Road, the road behind Cruisers, and it just kind of broadens out all the way to the border.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of eventually goes on the south side of south east, but just a little section.
Mm-hmm.
I remember one of the first times that I met you, I came into the bar, and I sat next to a guy. Very nice man.
The mayor.
He was the mayor.
Mayor Bob.
Yeah.
Yes.
And he was like, I've never met a mayor just chilling at the bar, bro. This is kick-ass.
When I first moved here, I got my first business license signed at the bar. And the mayor, it wasn't Mayor Bob. It was the mayor right before him. And he was like, yeah, you need to come down to First and Last Chance Bar, which isn't there anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But he goes, and we can't do anything until you crack open a beer. You know. So.
And you're like, as you're signing it, you're like, you know what? God bless Idaho, baby. I think I made the right choice up here.
Yeah, I lived across the street from the mayor in the town I grew up in. And,
did you ever egg his house or like moon him or anything?
It was a she, and her house wasn't any nicer than mine was. And I was like, oh, mayor must not pay well in a village of 1,200 people.
Good. Good. So you jump into the restaurant business, you get up here. I want to lead to like how your mind has changed from when you first started it to where you are now and stuff. But what was that first year like when you're doing everything for the first time?
Mm.
Obviously, the burger joint would give you lots of information on how the restaurant works and stuff. But
yeah,
I got a more specific question I've been wondering about too, because you're talking bikers.
Shit like all over my question. That's like fine. Go ahead.
Ties right in. The biker community and the Inland Northwest music community are. As far as I can tell, I mean, I know for a fact the music community, I'm not as involved with the biker community, but it seems like they're both pretty, like, you're not in until you're in kind of a thing, mm-hmm. you know? So, like, was there a period where you were, like, not accepted in those circles?
Yeah, no, there's definitely, especially not being a local boy, mm-hmm. you know, there was definitely a period. And then there's always just whenever, because the previous owners were all liked, you know, and they mm-hmm. had their own following, and people really... And they're really the ones that kind of did the whole bike thing, brought it really, you know, to fruition, really. They're the mm-hmm. ones that really did all that. So, yeah, no, I had a lot of hate.
I bet.
Just walking, you know, being the new guy, you know, it doesn't even matter.
It's nobody likes
just
the
fact, yeah, just yeah. the fact that it was a different owner. So there was
how
a
long did
battle.
It take to get your skin thicker? Get all those calluses from the naughty, mean people.
Well, there was, you know, there was a lot of support too, good. You know, mm-hmm. right away. People want to see, that's a good thing about the community is that they want to see people succeed. They want to support those small businesses.
Mm-hmm.
So I had, it was, you know, easily half and half for and against.
Cool. Did you ever have a moment where you were feeling like fuck this, man.
Why did I do this?
No, she was like, man, I got divorced in the first 4 months.
So. All right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we had problems before that. That's not the reason, right? You know, but still, yeah. No, it was
that's
tough times.
Challenge, yeah.
Yeah. First, I would say 2 or 3 winters. That was before we were even really doing music.
Mm.
And that's why about, yeah, year three going into that third winter, it was like, we need to do something in the wintertime.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'm not going to be here very much longer.
Right. I think that's when we started working with you, was in 2016, during that period, because we moved in the 2015. It was 2016, because Dave and Angus was in full swing doing their thing. And we started talking about doing the Songsmith series, which we actually launched in 2016.
Because
it was 2015 in downtown. Jackson Street.
That's right. And I thought you were a piece of shit when I met you.
It's the vibe.
Yeah. No, totally not true. In all honesty, you've been one of my favorite people to work with.
Yeah,
right on. By far.
And
by
continue
far.
To be.
Absolutely.
So,
like, yeah,
well, this is a guy that I think we've played 3 or 4 Halloweens now. 3, maybe 4. And he dresses up.
Yeah, 4. Yeah.
4.
It's got to be last, 4 at least.
Yeah, I feel like it has been at least 4. Yeah. And you've dressed up as Giorgio Tsoukalos, which is my favorite.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Aliens.
Yeah.
Beetlejuice. Mm-hmm. And I can't remember the other two. But
he was
Tsoukalos.
A doctor. Weren't you a doctor at one point?
Not a doctor. I think I just came in a...
You just started doing surgery on people anyway. It was just fucking whatever.
I thought you were wearing a white shop coat with blood on it.
No, definitely not that. I did wear a white suit one time.
But that's pretty much our guarantee. We want to play Cruisers for Halloween. That's how it's been.
Yeah, no, that's great. Yeah, it's been awesome.
It's a lot of fun.
Although we have played 0 shows this year as a band. So we'll be real rusty this year, that's for sure. We'll see. But so that first year was a challenge, obviously, with personal stuff. But then the people started embracing it. When did you start to build a team? You have a really good... group of people that seem
well
to
it's
be...
because we've been so seasonal and it gets difficult. I have a lot of turnover. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's rare. This is actually one of the I probably say the second year going into the season where I don't have to hold interviews.
Nice.
You know, the same staff's coming back, and they're coming back too. It's not we haven't been doing much this winter. We've only been open for jam nights on Thursdays and then the concerts and stuff. Mm-hmm. Kind of more event driven. So it's I feel very fortunate getting everybody back, not having to do that. But yeah, most of the time it's tough.
How long he's got a guy named Eric Clages?
Clages.
Sounds Canadian. He likes cocky, so we're just
he's like Wisconsin, but he claims I don't know, he's partial to Canadians for some reason.
He's the sound gnome.
The accent isn't too terribly different.
Yeah, right.
Between Wisconsin and Eastern Canada. There's a lot of overlap.
And they both like coffee.
Yeah, for sure bud.
He's on the rink. We'll settle it on the rink. Well, how long has Eric been on the...
He's been
our sound guy there the whole time.
Yeah, I would say... I'm trying to remember exactly when he started, because I actually ran sound first when we first got the... bought a bunch of old equipment from Jeff Angel.
Love him.
And I was
legend
actually... He taught me what to do, you know. And
he's
I was doing it for a while. Yeah,
Jeff
he's great.
Angel.
And then Shane Cantrell ran sound for, I would say, a couple of years.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
And then Eric took over from him. So Eric's got to be 5, 6 years in.
And, Eric wasn't really, a sound guy when he started doing it, was he?
No, well, I don't think, maybe for whatever band he was in or something.
Right,
he's really,
in the years working with him, because, I was around when he first started doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And in the years working with him, it's he went from being, a very friendly guy that kind of didn't know a lot of what he was doing to now being still a really friendly guy that's one of my favorite sound guys.
He's definitely a lot of self-taught, and he takes so much pride in what he does, and he always jokes around that it's his sound system. Mm-hmm. I have a place for it for him. But we upgrade as often as we can every year. We have a digital board. He runs it off an iPad now. I can't do any of that stuff. I was all the analog stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so I definitely feel fortunate that he loves it so much that I can throw some food at him.
Mm-hmm.
Feed him Coke all day long. Coca-Cola.
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He's a hockey guy. It's either that or maple syrup. Whatever. I don't know if we'll want to ask this or not. We've told the story of a flying cheeseburger. before.
Yes.
He's a character in the Scatverse now, mm-hmm. for sure. How long has Cheeseburger been around?
This will be his third summer that he's not there. But okay. Yeah, he was my very first hire.
Was
actually,
he?
Yeah.
Okay.
Cook. And,
I love cheese.
Good old cheese, yeah. And he was about 7 years. Yeah.
Wow.
About 7 years.
Yeah, we had the drummer for Blistered Earth on as an interview.
Oh, yeah.
And
the flying cheese. Okay, I get it now.
Yeah, we got to tell the story of the flying cheeseburger. Yeah.
Get off my stage.
We've actually told it from multiple angles. Yeah. That was right into, like, the funny thing about that is we got to sit and talk to Sean, the drummer for Blistered Earth, mm-hmm. and he got to tell us the story about the Metallica gear. Mm-hmm. And they didn't just like send a couple things or a gift certificate to Guitar Center. They sent those giant super Knight Rider trucks. They sent one of those Knight Rider trucks in front of his business that he was working owns and just started unloading like concert grade
equipment.
That's awesome,
crates
yeah.
and shit. And those were the guitars that they were his guitars, but he shoved Cheeseburger into those thousands of dollars worth of guitars.
Oh, wow, yeah.
It was just like, and Cheeseburger just flopped.
Yep.
Yeah.
Just like
yeah.
Grand Theft Auto Ragdoll.
Yeah, Grand Theft Auto Ragdoll, perfect.
It just like missed the headstock of an Explorer. Oh, a Flying V, don't worry, I won't break that.
That's awesome. Wasted.
That was one of my favorite things I've ever seen at any concert ever, because I was just front row, and it's the Grand Theft Auto thing, yeah. It was Ragdoll, like,
I think
wow.
That one, and probably a close second for me was that night that we were playing and a dude got out of hand and ended up getting shoved into the front door.
Yes.
And the
oh,
front
that's
door
the
like
I had a black
oh, just came off the hinges.
Yes. Monique got like jacked yeah.
I got the back of an elbow to the side of my face. That's right. I woke up in the morning with a black eye.
We're really selling the reputation.
Yeah. This is a Sovereign show, so things happen there that are unpredictable.
Yeah, it was definitely our fault.
Yeah. Well, let's go back to the beginning again. Do you remember the first show? Like who performed, or do you remember how it went? The first concert of original stuff, or even cover bands?
The one that sticks out probably the most would be our very first State Line Music Fest.
Mm.
Yeah, and that's one that Gary Cook put
yeah.
together.
Yeah.
And he was back in, Invasive, and mm-hmm. they headlined. And that was the first time. Cause
a
he had
promoter
been,
having their band head? No.
Yeah,
it never happens ever.
He had been doing karaoke for us. He was one of the guys that was something I inherited from the old owners, and he'd been doing karaoke, and he always said, I'm in a band too. And I was like, oh, okay, that's cool, you know? But if that was the first time I saw him play in Invasive, I was super impressed.
He's a great singer.
That's that one. That's probably the most memorable, like, first time show.
Awesome.
When we kind of went bigger.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So let's kind of just take it from the whole time you've been there. Like, you've had some big shows. What's been some of the most memorable ones?
You better say Sovereign, you motherfucker.
Well, it's the first time.
Who's your favorite band besides Sovereign?
Besides
us.
Well, Gary's also one that turned me on to you guys, you know? So, yeah,
thanks,
the first
Gary.
Time I saw it, I was like, wow, that's great. We're going to do this all the time.
Well, we're happy to do
it. But, yeah, you know, I kind of always like to brag to people that come in and they say, you know, ask who's like play. But we've had like, you know, at least a half a dozen bands that you could play on the jukebox,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
right?
In
Quiet Riot. They're not called Boboflex anymore, but they changed their name to something now.
Great band.
Of course, Texas Hippie Coalition.
Mm-hmm. We opened for them one time.
Yeah, that was one on the inside. Yeah, I was running sound for that one actually for you guys. Yeah, I did. Yeah. We did all right.
We're a pain. We're a pain in the dick.
Yeah.
We have two meetings.
Running sound for us is
three days.
Sovereign's a sound guy's nightmare.
Yeah.
I know. I ran
sound
in practice.
Instruments. Some guys play two instruments. You know.
Well, that's when I remember that show when you guys opened for THC, because I was running sound and I couldn't get the violin player. And yeah, it was a stupid DI box. You know, I didn't have the passive on. You know. So anyway,
there's so many gremlins involved with our band too when it comes to sound. Like I had a digital system in our practice space that I ran off of a tablet is the word I was groping in the dark for. And I'd like get it all dialed in 1 week. It would sound tits. I'd save it as a preset. I'm like, good. I can just load that up, from here until forever.
And then the ghost behind the scenes is like, nope.
And then next week, like three of the guys would be like, what the fuck? I can't hear this. I'm like, I didn't change anything.
Yeah, exactly.
I know which guys they were, too.
Yeah, you too.
Fucking bass players.
3 Days Grace had one of their pre-show funks there. Actually, they were playing at the Knit, and they came out and just to on a Thunder Thursday. And
that's awesome.
Yeah, that was kind of cool.
Post Adam Gontier? Like, was that their different lead singer?
I don't recall now, actually. Yeah.
I think he had a lot of drug issues, and he was very in and out for a while. And then they were like, yeah, we're going to replace you, bud.
It's so weird how that happens.
Right.
And then they had a voice that's so similar that nobody really noticed. They're all like, oh, yeah, go through. Same band.
I mean, I noticed, but I was I was big into 3 Days Grace when I was in fucking high school. So.
Fair enough.
So having owned the bar and ran music through the bar and hosted shows and that sort of thing, is there one evening, like one event or one evening that stands out as the weirdest fucking thing you've ever experienced?
The weirdest thing.
Mm-hmm. Where it's like, what the fuck happened here? Weird.
Did anything go right? I don't think so.
And I'm not talking about just bad things happening, but one thing that stands out where you're like, okay, that's fucking weird.
Oh, I got one. Flying cheeseburger.
Yeah, besides that sort of thing.
Yeah, that was like really fun.
Yeah.
That was fun for all the people.
I'm trying to think, you know, there's just so many nights that that are just like really cool.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as weird and stuff, mm-hmm. you know, something that stands out, I don't know. You know, that's a hard one.
Well, we had my mom and dad owned a tavern, a hotel restaurant tavern type thing, and they had live music. And the one that stands out for me is one of the people, the touring bands that came through. They tried to light one of the rooms on fire.
Oh.
So, yeah, it's that sort of thing.
Too many bands watch behind the music VH1 and they're like, let's just do all the things there. And they're like, sure, you practice your songs? No, we're just going to be rock stars, break things, blow up TVs,
well,
do drugs.
I'm not entirely sure how it even came about, but they set the curtains on fire.
It was probably innocent. Probably somebody just smoking some crack.
Just a little meth among friends.
A little crack.
As an owner of this place, it's like, why the fucking curtains? Yeah.
Well, yeah, we did have a band, Adam Baum, actually come through, and he was all, you know, in emails, he was all like, well, we do a little bit of, you know, fire and stuff like that, mm-hmm. you know, and I was like, well, we got Sovereign, you know, they got fire dancers and breathers and stuff. Like, it shouldn't be a problem. He goes, yeah, it's not that big. But yeah, he comes in and, lights his guitar on fire at the end of a show and like lighter fluid on it, you know.
Oh shit, and like no safety.
Puts it up. No, nothing. He burns his hand so he drops it.
Oh no.
I've never done this before.
Oh, shit.
Lighter fluid on the cymbals, you know, like that, and then they light it and the drummer crashes
it
and
goes everywhere.
Oh no.
Yeah, he melted a little bit of the drum riser.
Oh my god!
So that was probably kind of that was one, but yeah, that
at
was
the end of the show.
Excessive.
You're like, so have you ever done that before? Yeah. Is it the first time? Well,
he had done it before the first time, and he actually pulled everything off really cool.
You know,
but
you
the second time, he came back like a month later or something, and we hit one of the festivals that were going on, and yeah,
that's
totally.
Why Cheeseburger isn't around anymore. Yeah.
Cheeseburger almost did blow himself up one time using our big smoker. Yeah,
did
burned
it?
Half his beard off. Yeah.
Yep.
So we started calling him Smoke Cheese.
Couldn't it happen to a nicer guy?
No. I bet if we were to do an interview with him, his life story would be pretty interesting too.
That is one. Yeah, he's such a nice guy.
Yeah, one of the nicest.
Just honest and as loyal and biggest heart you could ever have. And
that's what I think of when I think of cruisers. Is you have like it's almost like a pirate ship with cool characters. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, you're Johnny Depp. Yeah. You are. But you've got some, an
got
Orlando
pirate,
Bloom.
The
you've
pirate
got,
code.
Yeah.
The pirate code, yeah.
Just don't hook up characters. With anybody named Amber.
No.
Unless you're into people shitting on
you. Yeah, you like the bed to smell like poopies.
Not here to shame you what you're into. I don't want to yuck your yum, dude. I was reminiscing the other day, actually, about that night that we rolled over and met you at Cruisers and went over to Nashville North. And our compatriot, who shall remain unnamed, was wandering over there with us and had a few too many. And on the way over, he just like takes a header into the ground, like broke his fall with his nose.
Oh.
And I was standing like right next to him and like tried to catch him. But
oh, no.
couldn't. Yeah. And so he's on the ground, and I'm like, oh my God, dude. Like, come on. And so I'm like, trying to pick him up, and I get him up. His nose is bleeding, and he looks at me, and he goes, the fuck did you do to me? I was like, nothing. You fucking got in a fight with the ground, man.
My name's not Gravity, bro. That's you and Gravity's thing. Do I know this person? I bet I know this person.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Good stuff. It wasn't me, was it?
Sweet guy.
Okay.
It wasn't you.
Okay. Well, you wouldn't describe me as
that. I never would have let that go if it was you. I know. We'd still be talking about it.
That's fair enough. Fuck. Well, so I've seen a bunch of concerts at Cruisers. We played there a bunch of times. I don't know. Like, what is the biggest band? Is it Three Doors Down that's come through? Or Three Days Grace?
That was just their
to hang out.
Pre-party. Yeah, hanging out.
Would be Quiet Riot, maybe.
Name. Even though it was Benally was the only member, you know, original member kind of thing. So, but that was kind of cool.
Who do you want to have? Is there anybody that you're looking for this year or in the future, or it'd be like a dream gig to have there?
I don't know about dream gig. Actually, I was really bummed because of COVID. I was talking to the Who, you know, the Mongolian HU, the Who, and I basically had them just about contracted in,
that's when COVID,
and that was early on. Yeah, it was like really before they.
Now they're like selling out big concerts.
Yeah, exactly. I saw them down at Daytona at Rockville, you know, and I was like, damn, that would have been cool.
That's the special thing about being the venue size that you are, is you're going to get awesome bands, but they're going to be somewhere in their career that's not at the pinnacle, so you get to see people on the way up.
On the way up.
Or on the way down, too.
Yeah. I feel like Sovereign opening for The Who would be so much fucking fun.
That'd be a blast.
Yeah, that would be
it's
cool.
Like, it's not the same vibe, but it's close enough in weirdness.
I remember when I saw that video for the first time, I was like, oh, we need one of those instruments.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
We need a throat singer.
We need six more instruments is what we need. Why not? Six more inputs on that sound system.
Shit.
We're not a real band until we have 13 members.
That's right.
It's not a band, it's an orchestra.
So what's your favorite thing that Sovereign ever did? Just kidding. So there's people that listen to this all around the country. Mm-hmm. A lot of them are entrepreneurial. So let's talk a little bit about the business thing. Like, what gave you the confidence to just be in business? Just, is it just the way you are, or did you grow up around some people that own businesses that inspired you?
Well, he's built different.
You know, like I said, just the drive from early on to want to work for myself, to do something, just, you know, had the mindset for that. But I really got fortunate, to be honest, with my restaurant in Red River, New Mexico, a little ski town, summer resort town, so it was seasonal. And just the business was great. Because your little town of 500 that can, you know, averages probably like maybe 5,000 tourists, and it changes every week. So you got 5,000 new people coming every week.
That's
you
awesome.
Know? So it's kind of a captive audience.
Yeah.
And turnover, and it was just.
So you were like, you know what? I'm sick of making all this money.
Yeah.
I'm
going
to go to Idaho and challenge myself.
And it was definitely a change. But like I said, I was. Help in the food industry, especially, you know, quality control is tough. It's tougher. I thought it was tougher to find people to put the food out the way it should be, to care enough to get the quality right, you know. And so I was basically back there, you know, 7 days a week doing it myself.
Because you're right, it is hard to find.
And the
care.
Good people you can't afford.
Yeah.
You know, they're moving on. Like we had my stepson at the time, he was really good. Well, he ended up going off to culinary school. You know, just the burger, flipping burgers isn't the long-term thing unless you're owning it, you know.
Right.
But, so it was tough, And I thought, man, it's like I said, it's going to be so much easier just to open up a beer. I don't have to watch it cook. I don't have to make sure it comes out right.
You don't
it's
have
cold.
To plate it.
You know, there
so,
you go.
So yeah. Let's, say, plate let's say there's another person that's in those shoes that's like, I was just doing a restaurant, I'm going to open. Would you tell them, it is just as easy, or is it harder?
No, it's the same. Yeah, it's definitely the same. As far as dealing with the staffing, those are the, you know, staff is the number one stressor, really, in business. And
well, staff will make or break your business, too.
It's a lot of overhead, too.
Yeah.
That's the largest overhead. I like tell people, I've had people, you know, approach me about they wanting to buy a business in town or something, or a bar in town, and I always tell people count on 40%, especially starting off. You know, 40% of your revenue goes towards labor. and that's a huge number, you know.
Yeah.
The profit margin on bars, restaurants averages less than 10%.
That's what I thought. Restaurants are so low.
Yeah.
Has the shift in the economy the last handful of years made it?
The last two or 3 years have been rough, yeah. I was down 40% last year in sales, yeah.
That's funny because I've noticed that down with my retail company. I was down 36% last year.
Well, you see, you know, bars and restaurants in this whole area, I mean, there's at least five or six that have closed down over the last year and a half or so. Yeah.
I've been running a biz, like a magazine for music, since about 2003. And so we've seen just dozens and dozens of venues with great ideas come and go and come and go. But it does feel like this is the least amount of venues that we've ever had. Mm-hmm. The least amount of opportunities. Also the least amount of bands, too. I haven't seen that many new bands. And you know, I keep my eye on a few of the people that are always trying to promote new bands, and they exist, but very few compared to, I mean, when I first started doing this, it was like the thing to do, you know, and there was a venue on every street kind of thing. So, but none of them were always like guaranteed to make money. It's always been a hard business.
I feel like that shit is high on the list of things that go out the window when everybody's pockets get tight, you know, where it's like all the guys that were doing it weekend warrior style doing music, they're just like, oh, it doesn't make sense for me to be doing this now. I gotta you know, tighten my purse strings and stop wasting my time doing stuff that's basically amounting to a hobby, even if they don't feel like it's a hobby, you know. It's just like all those guys are just out the window when the economy starts taking a nosedive, except for the handful of diehards. And then with venues suffering, it's like less people are looking to pay for live music, cause it's like, fuck, I don't know if the return on that's going to be like, it's more of a dice roll at that point. So
and for
like,
musicians,
it's less booking, it's less people playing, it's some places shut down cause they just can't hack it, or they were in a bad spot before things took a nosedive. And
I read an article about Trent Reznor talking about how basically the whole generation of artists has been just neutered by a couple things, but economy, Napster, and all the downloads and stuff. But basically, if you want to see your favorite band that's from the last 10 years, go to Jiffy Lube, because the drummer and the bass player work there. And then across the street at the restaurant, the guitar player works there. Singer doesn't work. He just lives with his girlfriend. but that's it. Giggity. And it's weird because, you know, my age group, we all followed the same. We're like, we watched VH1 and we're like, we're going to be rock stars too. And and we, you know, we read the books about like, here's what you do if you want to get a manager, if you want to go on tour and, you know, maybe practice your instrument, do that too. And we're like, no, let's drink and get a manager. And, you know, all the advice they gave you in those books was done like that. I think it was like 97. I was reading that. And they're like, don't worry about the internet. That's just a fad. And then, you know, next year you're like, oh fuck, I need to throw away all the things I learned. I don't know anything about anything now. But it was weird because, yeah, we followed this little path of basically what the Beatles started, or what before the Beatles a little bit started, and it's like a copy of a copy of a copy, and it kept going, and we were like at the end watching it all kind of die and change, though, shift. It's not like music's not popular or music's not fun. It's just difficult to go from a grassroots artist that no one had, with no connections, whatever, and follow that path. Like, there was I don't think anyone in my age group was ever in a bar and then agent came in and was like, let's sign him right there. It was like, that's never fucking happened. That guy paid $80,000 to get on that concert or that tour or whatever, and that's what happened.
Well, things have changed since Napster, really.
Yeah.
It changed a lot.
Once we figured out, I mean, the radio's free, but it's not free for the artist and it's not free for the radio. It's just free for the listener. But yeah, once people were like, well, they don't need to pay for the studio time that much. They're making all that profit or whatever. Once we realized we could just download it, it was like...
It changed a lot of stuff.
It made it so
not
all the
just for
middle
the
level
yeah.
couldn't really exist in the same way.
Not just for the artists, but for the labels.
We became t-shirt salespeople.
Yeah.
That's basically all it is.
Yes.
Please buy my t-shirt. That's all we have.
However, live music is still desired.
Oh, huge, yeah.
By the public.
The people still love music. We just don't want to pay for it in the same way. And so it's been interesting to watch artists be creative and come up with different ways to kind of come up with promotion and revenue. Yeah. And it's been
like, interesting. It makes me personally a lot more touchy when people threaten the already very slim profit margin that I maintain as a performer. Like prime example, I had this guy, I won't light him up by name, but last weekend when I was playing Hagfest,
Bob,
he hit me up And like, we don't have, I have more history with some of my enemies around here than I have with this guy, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just like we know each other, but just circumstantially, excuse me. And he happened to be in town, hit me up. He's like, you playing any shows this weekend? I'm like, yeah, I'm playing two. They're kind of a unique thing. I don't know if you'd be into it, but I'll send you the info. And he's like, okay, cool. So I sent it to him, and then he sends me a text, and he's like, so do I get like free VIP tickets at the door?
Oh, that question.
Yeah. I keep them in my money bin.
Would you put me on a list?
Yeah, and I replied to him, is that a fucking joke?
Where do you work? Can I have a free car?
Yeah.
And he
yeah.
said, car wash? And he said, ha ha, and ghosted me and never came. I was like, okay, fine. I was like, don't. Like, yeah. Man, like, it's like, I'm already, like, unbeknownst to this guy, it's like, I'm not getting paid for this. I'm doing it for the love of the game. Mm-hmm. Like, this particular gig, like, I'm not taking any money. Like, same with, like, most of the shows I've played with Sovereign. I'm like, I'm not going to be the guy who's like, pay me.
Right.
I'm like, no, if we make money, put it into, like, put it towards the cause. Like, I'm doing right. this because I love it. But especially when you're playing on a bill with other artists. Mm-hmm. That and you've all been working your asses off to not only present a good show, but like sometimes sell tickets. Otherwise, you know, like at the very least, promote it, advertise it. You're stressing out for weeks, like, oh my god, if we don't get enough people to show up, the venue owner's gonna be pissed at us. You know, it's just like mm-hmm. this
I don't miss that vibe anymore.
Right, it's this whole realm of like stress, and there's not much money to be made there to begin with. And then some fucker comes up with their entitlement and they're like, I'll come to your show if you get me in for free. It's like, don't come. Right. Like, yeah. Like, I'm no, dude. Like, it's like, even if it was just like, if I wanted you in for free, you wouldn't have to ask, first of all.
Yeah.
And second of all, like, if I'm not the only one playing, like, it's not like this is my solo gig. If I give you a free ticket, I'm taking money out of everybody mm-hmm. else's pocket mm-hmm. that worked yeah. to make this happen.
Yeah. And the fact that and you asked that
not,
question.
That's not something I'm going to do because I'm not a piece of shit. So, yeah, go fuck yourself. Keep your 10 bucks, dude.
The fact that he asked that question means, like, there's a high likelihood that that's going to be the play some Skinner guy.
Yeah, like, dude.
He came in for free. 100%. He drank fucking, yeah, and then yeah, he yelled Skinner.
Got wasted on $5 PBRs and fucking.
He's the car drinker. In the parking lot guy.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah.
I drink my own from home.
He drinks in, that's the, mouthwash, he drinks in dude. The car and then whatever. Comes in fucking trash.
He's like, he I make my own money at the bar.
Yeah. Cruisers is kind of fortunate as far as the debauchery part. You know, I guess he used to be real wild in the day. Laws have changed since then. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I remember playing there when everybody was smoking in there and it was yeah. like a cloud hanging.
Yeah, when we were smoking, like, yeah, now we're yeah. non-smoking. You get yeah, up it was on horrible. The, even the smokers the would be like, you open the door. Yeah.
You know? You get up on stage, you gain some elevation, and you're looking at everybody through yeah, a cloud. Above it. You're trying to sing, and you're like, where carry on back.
Yeah, doing the non-smoking thing really did a lot for the music scene. Yeah, I had bands that were like, yeah, you know, we can't play. Come. Yeah. We can't, you know, singer hurts their voice or whatever. Yeah. But we're fortunate in the fact that the demographic that we've had is an older demographic, mm-hmm. typically. You know, I don't have fights. You know, right. I don't have the big problems. People pretty well maintained.
It's a pretty good sense of camaraderie. And it is,
yeah.
Too.
Yeah. Yeah. And, people look you out know, for I, each other. I rarely have security or bouncers or anything like that. Customers, if a bartender, one of the female bartenders or any bartender has to do anything, cut somebody off, you know, she's always got somebody around. Mm-hmm. So there hasn't been a bunch of wild and crazy. Like, oh shit, what just happened? Right. You know, so.
How do you feel on the venue owner side of things about the age old debate of like, if I book a band, it's like, oh, well, does your band have a draw? Like, are you going to bring people in?
Yeah.
And then the band is like, well, does your bar have a draw, bro?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, right. where do you weigh in right. on that?
It has to be a team effort.
Agreed.
You know, yeah. it just has to. Yeah. Cause especially. What I've been doing the last 2 or 3 years, going more towards events and concerts, I don't have that Friday night crowd. That's, right. you know, I'm not going to have the 30 people that are in there anyway, mm-hmm. you know, so, but I definitely can't be, I'm not going to be like, well, I'll pay you if the turnout's good or something like mm-hmm. that. You know, I try to.
Yeah, you've never been that guy. I mean, I've done a couple of shows that I put together there and some of them went great. And one for sure that I can remember, I was standing around the whole night being like, fuck. Like, fuck.
I hate that feeling.
And I was like, I was dreading having to talk to you about it at the end of the night. And the end of the night, you were just like, right on, man.
Yeah, cool. No, here's, and then you know that's
money and, like, we're good.
And there's like, yeah, there's shows like that where I enjoy it so much. It's like, man, I just, you know, whatever. I paid $150 for for a good show, man. It was that was awesome. You know, so you can't have a bunch of those, obviously. No. But
it's always a gamble. Too,
it's always a gamble, but it definitely has to. Weather,
people's personal circumstances. Like, yeah. there's so many factors out of your control. It's like it could be gangbusters, or it could be like.
Yeah,
eight people that are diehard.
And like you said, age old, and you see the debates on Facebook and stuff on social media. And my first thought, like when bands are talking, I mean the bands are in business for they're in business. You know, if they're wanting money, you know, then they have to ensure that they're giving a product that people want to buy. Mm-hmm. You know, I can't serve a bunch of crap out of the bar and expect people to buy it.
Yeah.
You know, so. That's why I say team effort, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
As a venue, I got to make sure it's a welcoming place where people want to hang out and have fun. Mm-hmm. And whatever entertainment comes in needs to entertain.
I agree. Yeah. I agree completely, like on the artist standpoint. And like I've for many years treated my music pursuits like a business because I realized that you have to if you want to remain relevant and find any degree of success. It's like you have to you can't just be like, I just want to write songs and people just love me for that and do nothing else. It's like that'd be great but it just most of the time doesn't work that way, so you got to be entrepreneurial about it. But it does need to be a team effort, like, and that's I love playing at Cruisers because if I am promoting it and I'm like, this is one of my favorite places to play. It's gonna be awesome. The sound's gonna be good. Like the crowd's gonna be, you know, like you're not gonna feel like you're being alienated or in a place where you don't belong. The food's good. The service is good. Like it's like I feel comfortable saying that about Cruisers because I know like that's always the way that it's been. Whereas other places I play, I'm not gonna be like, come to the best place to in town to listen to music and drink, because I know before I even walk in there, I'm just like, this is fucking, I wouldn't come if I wasn't playing here, you know?
Yep.
Fair enough.
But it's tricky too, though, because like you get like, as a band or even a solo artist, you get this like group of loyal people that will come and, but after supporting you for a certain amount of time, they're like, dude, I still have to pay $20 to come and see you. I've come to 100 of your shows. Mm-hmm. It's like,
As a business, we should have like a punch card, like a coffee, like regular card. Yeah. It's like, okay, like, give me your card. Yes, you get a free one. Come on in. Yeah. We definitely should.
It is the Inland Northwest music punch card.
That'd be awesome. Well, there is kind of a disconnect between artistry and business a lot of times. Mm-hmm. Like, I've noticed that with interviewing lots of artists, there's just not a lot of focus on business because they're busy being artists.
Yeah.
So, do you see that a lot with working with some of the. I mean, you're dealing with managers and management companies too, but you deal with a lot of independent artists.
On the bigger shows, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Most of the stuff we do, you know, on a on the average weekend is just with the artists themselves, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah.
The bigger shows have the agents, have the, you know, the labels and stuff, but
yeah.
I would say that's like maybe a half dozen a year of all the shows we do
right.
that actually work with an agent.
It would be nice to see bands and venues work together more. I think those are the good shows for sure. When you see a venue advertising and a band advertising and them working together on making sure that it's packed. That's the only way to do it. But now I got a more important question, I think. The burger stack. I enjoy reading a lot of the stuff
fucking burger stack.
That you post. And so for people that listen to the Dave and Angus show every Thursday, we had Angus kind of go off a couple of weeks ago on the proper stacking of a burger's ingredients.
Mm-hmm.
And it was 100% inspired by a post that you made and the way that you were telling people. But let's talk about it. Like, you're about to launch a burger.
Yeah, that's like I've said already, that's what I did for 5 years before buying Cruisers. And I was so tired of it when I bought Cruisers, I just wanted to sling drinks. Part of it to do with... just economy and stuff, mm-hmm. you know, with numbers down and stuff. You got to always think, you always got to be evolving. You got to stay ahead of the trends, mm-hmm. you know? And, so I got the itch to do it again, to do the burgers again. And the other big reason is cause I don't want to be seasonal anymore, mm-hmm. mostly for my staff. You know, I feel fortunate, I've said, to have the same staff coming back this year, but I would rather make them happy, mm-hmm. making money year round. And that kind of just solidifies the whole business as a whole. So I'm bringing burgers back.
Heck yeah.
And I'm nice. Actually just bringing,
burgers back. Bikers don't know.
They're not just slopping shit together.
Not slopping shit
there's
together.
There's artistry to this.
Yeah, there's a science behind it. You know, there's a certain way to build your burger.
Where'd you learn this in say SpongeBob?
The
Krabby Patty formula.
Yeah. Yeah, straight, well, as it turns out, that's pretty accurate. Yeah.
That's pretty good.
No, I just learned it through trial and error at my burger joint. And,
right.
So I'm bringing a specialty burger. You know, I'm not doing, it's, you know, nothing at Cruisers is cliche or mundane. You know, we kind of do our own thing, and right. I'm doing my number one bestseller from, 12 years ago. That's what I'm bringing back.
Nice.
Signature style of burgers.
Can you just tease us with it a little bit?
Well, I'm doing a soft opening this weekend, so
ooh.
Yeah. No,
so local people can come out and check it out.
Yeah, yeah. Soft opening.
I'm going to go out there. I want to check it out.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we got some promo material, but yeah, I can say it here on the podcast because I do a tortilla burger. That's the big hype. It's not a wrap. You know, okay. I don't think burrito style like McDonald's used to do, the Big Mac wrap or whatever.
Remember, we did that for this one of the Sovereign shows.
Yeah.
We had a Big Mac burrito or
yeah,
Big Mac wrap.
Like that, yeah, on the menu. Yeah, no, I just use a tortilla instead of a bun. It's folded like a diaper, kind of, you know, so you fold it in on itself and,
well, I love
and
tortillas
it keeps,
and burger
keeps all the heat of the patty off of the crispness of the veggies, and it's less bread. Bread is where most people screw up burgers. Mm-hmm. You know, it's either too big or it's... They sell it, you know, the brioche bun or ciabatta, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
They use the bread as or they toast it so hard because they don't want to get soggy.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So the tortilla avoids all that. Yeah.
It's,
so we got some.
Honestly, the bun is my least favorite part of a burger anyway. So
yeah. Oh, see, I have to say it's my favorite.
That. Really?
The bun. It's either in my opinion, the bun either makes or breaks a burger. Uh-huh. If the bun doesn't taste right, it ruins the whole thing for me.
It definitely can.
Yeah.
A bad bun definitely can.
I feel like the bun, even if it's good or it's bad, it kind of takes over the experience for me. Like, I'm like, oh, I got a mouthful of bread with some other stuff in there.
Yeah.
Well,
see
I'm a bread fiend.
Yeah.
So maybe that's why.
that might be the difference, yeah, for sure. But, and it's not just the build. Like you said, the Krabby Burger is pretty close. That's what, you know, that's what you do. It's the amount, it's the balance of it,
okay.
You know, how much you're putting on of whatever you're putting on and where you're putting it on too.
This soft opening Saturday,
actually starting Friday night, tomorrow night. And then, Saturday and Sunday.
So tonight because the show's coming out, we're recording the night before and it'll be tonight. Soft opening in Stateline Village, Idaho, for
locals
or regionals.
So, yeah, you can come check out the tortilla burger, and there's also four bands playing tomorrow night too. So,
hell yeah, who's playing? Do you remember any of the names?
Yeah, Out West, Mezzanine.
Oh, boo. Just kidding. I'm just kidding.
Fire from Ashes, and so
cool,
heavy show. Some
Out West is like country, I think.
Are they?
Yeah.
Are they?
Okay. I love how you guys looked at me like I'm supposed to
you
know.
Booed.
I booed. I know. I booed without knowledge.
Why did you not know?
I just like hating things I don't understand.
But I'm really, really excited to do this. I got my old grill up and running. I actually moved my grill from my old place up here with the intention of using it, and I broke part of it. The thermostat stems, you know, a little where the knob is, you know, broke all those off, sliding something into the U-Haul.
And there's 0% of any of that that's cheap, I'm sure.
And when I wanted to get it up and running right away, and it was like about $1,500, which I could not do at all. Prices have actually gone down a little bit since then.
Good.
So I did about 3 days worth of resurrecting Bertha.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
It was Bertha. So,
she was born in 1966. I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah.
So it's an old season.
Is Bertha have like a patina? Like, is it like a good cast iron? Or it's like she's got her...
She's stainless. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah. But I definitely had to do some stuff and season her back up and lube her up, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, 1966, all the wires, you know, inside were the cloth covered old wires.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I was like, okay, it's all redone.
That should be in a museum probably soon.
It's pretty close. Even when I called, it's made by Star Manufacturing. I called them and I was like, hey, what's your serial number, you know, or model number?
6.
And it was... basically it was 156. And they're like, wow, you sure you don't want this brand new one? I'm like, oh, you know,
I'm
this one.
Certain.
And I go way back
to get an oven shipped up. That's not going on the back of a pickup truck, is it? That's going in a semi or something, or
it's not that big. It's 3 feet.
Is it 3 feet?
You can a couple of people. It's heavy, you know, big stainless flat top.
Mm-hmm. All right, so it could go in the back of a pickup truck.
Yeah.
Drive it all the way from New Mexico in the Vortex.
Yeah, it went in the U-Haul, yeah. But no, really excited to do that. Like I said, the tortilla burger, you got to find yours. You won't see pictures on social media. I'm not promoing it with pictures or anything like that. That's, to me, that was cliche.
You gotta come see for yourself.
We don't sell pics. We sell taste, and you know, you gotta come taste it. So you can't taste a picture.
Dicks.
Oh, pictures.
We don't sell dick pics. Combine the two.
I distinctly remember buying a dick at Cruisers one time. Might not have been sanctioned, but goddamn.
I don't know what the hell you were up to, but it sounds fun. We did have a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. Look forward to more fun for sure. I do want to tell you, because you're in the Scatcast verse, we're going to make a Cruisers card.
Yes.
For our cards. We have a trading card. We've been doing it for over a year and a half now. We've got lots and lots of cards out there.
Oh, sweet.
Are you okay with that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll make a Cruisers gold rookie card.
There you go. Use the 1CB logo. You know, okay. That's kind of what we're transitioning to, nice. You know, identity-wise.
Cruisers Boulevard.
One Cruisers Boulevard.
Hell yeah. All right.
A road runs through it.
Yeah.
Indeed. All right, so what we like to do is we do a little segment called Brainy Meets, and we read smart people's words from the past, and we go, oh, and we just kind of look at each other for a second and go, wow, that's smart, and then we move on.
That's easy.
Let's do it. Let's fry up some Brainy Meat.
Now let's do something constructive for our Brainy Meats. It's time for Thinky Things.
All right, here we are. I've only got 3 for today, but they're pretty good. I've got Albert Einstein as one of them. We'll lead this off. I love this quote. I don't know if I've ever heard this until just this week. Quote, we are slowed down sound and light waves, a walking bundle of frequencies tuned into the music of the cosmos. We are souls dressed up in sacred biochemical garments, and our bodies are the instruments through which our souls play their music.
Wow.
Yeah, it gave me goosebumps.
Yeah.
Wow. Who wrote that?
Albert Einstein.
God dang.
So, yeah, now this is the point where we just kind of look at each other and go, wow.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Wow. That was
vibration. That must have been that one time he tried absinthe.
I got a little green fairy on my shoulder, and it's the sound of the music soul light waves.
Somebody coated his pipe, the mouthpiece of his pipe, with a little bit of LSD.
It's like, Albert, your body's an instrument. Oh, my God, it is.
It is.
You are so right.
I'm gonna go with this other. Excuse me, I'll be right back. I'm gonna go play the skin flute. All right, I got
my body's less of an instrument and more of a kind of broken down car.
I feel
it's a high maintenance vehicle.
I feel that mine's got lug nuts kind of falling off the back end, smoke coming out the back. I coal everywhere I go.
Yeah, you do.
My seals need to be replaced and shit. Yeah, I hear you.
I like how Shane's like, yeah, you do.
Like, I've seen
put deodorant on. I took a shower.
I can vouch.
All right, Mr. Our next Brainy Meat. Now that one was pretty good. I like that one.
Great.
That one might be difficult to top, but this one's also pretty good. This one's a little more somber. Quote, the majority of mankind is lazy-minded, incurious, absorbed in vanities, and tepid in emotion, and therefore incapable of either much doubt or much faith, end quote.
Apathy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. An apathetic human.
He's kind of looking down at everybody like, you're dumb cunts. T.S. Eliot.
T.S. Eliot.
Yeah.
Basically, all of that is quippy and apathetic yet dumb cunt.
He's also saying that most people aren't capable of being anything other than lazy-minded, which is kind of pessimistic, but if you lived long enough, you're probably right there too. Like, well, right. Doesn't seem like it. I really like this one too. This is the last one for the Brainy Meats. This is Jean de La
Fontaine,
and I imagine he smoked when he wrote this. Quote, a person often meets his destiny on the road he took to avoid it, end quote.
Oh, wow.
See? Oh, mm-hmm.
I've had I've had that talk with people regarding relationships, people that are just like despairing that they're not in a relationship or they can't find somebody to be with. And I'm like, you know, in my experience, when you're looking for it is when you're least likely to find it. Mm-hmm. And when you just decide that you're good on your own and that things are fine the way that they are and that, you know, it's, I don't really need that. That's when it comes and fucks your shit up.
Totally. Yeah, exactly. Just sweeps it all
you're
out.
You're like, I was fine.
Or when you're afraid of something.
Who sent you?
There's a difference there too. I mean, telling yourself that's what you want and telling yourself that's how you feel won't work. Hmm. You actually have to embody that idea where it's like, okay, I'm good with this now. I'm enjoying this. I'm moving forward with this. Whatever it is, doesn't matter if it's a relationship, if it's a career, whatever choice you make, whatever path you're on, if you're embracing it wholeheartedly and not trying to convince yourself that you're embracing it, that's when shit happens that you least expect. That's where relationships, as an example, because you brought that up. If you are a person who is deciding that you're okay being alone and you want to move forward, you don't need that person in your life, and you're telling yourself that, but deep down inside you're still desiring it, you're not going to find the person.
No.
You need to actually embody it. You have to actually be like, this is cool, and enjoy the path, because then the person is going to present themselves, well, whoever that person may be.
Right.
So, and that's from my experience.
Well, I mean, to put it simply, if you're not good with you, like if you're not good with being alone with you, how can you expect anybody else to be?
Yeah, that's it. That's
or, you know, that it same applies to a career path or any type of path that you may be following, anything. So, embody it and own it, and that's where things change.
100%.
Yeah.
Okay, I lied about having three. I have two more. It looks like you might have one.
I got one.
You
dude.
Do?
Okay. I got a sci-fi.
You got a Brainy Meat?
I got a sci-fi quote. Like, it's a quote by the author that wrote the book.
Is it a Brainy Meat or is it just a nugget?
It's a
brain nugget.
It's a little nugget.
Oh,
it's,
nice.
But it's meat, though. It's like a cubed.
You could chew it.
Fried rice.
You could chew it.
Is it? It's not a chicken cutout shaped piece of meat.
Dino nuggy.
It's more like a fish stick.
Well, why don't you go first? Let's hear your sci-fi
fish
author.
Sticks.
So the quote is
fish dicks.
Fish dicks in and around my mouth. You gay fish cow. Quote is, when I understand my enemy well enough to defeat him, then in that moment, I also love him.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh. Ender's Game, baby.
Yeah, yes.
Ender A. Wigan. That book was like formative for me when I was younger. Like, I first read it and I was like, whoa.
Did you like the Harrison Ford movie?
This book is wild. You know, I just recently watched it because when it first came out, I was like, nah.
That's how everybody was.
I was like that book, Ender's Game and Ender's Shadow, were like two of my all-time favorite books. And I was like, when the movie came out, I was like, no, I'm not doing it. I can't bear to watch what they did to it, you know. And I watched it recently, and I was like, man, it wasn't terrible. Like, they left out so much shit, but. You know, they had to.
It would have been a 4.5-hour movie.
Yeah,
if they didn't.
Yeah,
it would have cost.
I would have been there for it. I would have paid. They could have split it into three parts. I would have paid $20 a pop to go see it in theaters every time. But
they didn't know that beforehand. They're like, we don't know that Shaden exists and that there's millions of Shadens.
I know, it's been a minute, but yeah, that one. I was like, that quote struck me because it's
true.
It is true because it's like if you're opposed with somebody, like if you're vehemently opposed with somebody and you're working to understand them, even if the pursuit of understanding them is to know how best to defeat them, if you actually come to understand them well enough to know instinctually how to defeat them,
you'll have sympathy.
It's like, oh, well, I kind of can't help but have some of the love that they have for themselves, because it's like I kind of see where it's coming from now, which is sort of the plight of like being, you know, in the philosophical sense or in the literal sense of being like a warrior. You know, it's just like, oh, well, I got my enemy. I got to know my enemy well enough to defeat him.
Mm-hmm.
But then I felt really, really fucking awful having to put him down, because it's like, oh, I kind of see you now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's kind of part of Art of War, too. Sun Tzu.
Yeah, Sun Tzu. I was just thinking of that, too. Know yourself.
Know your enemy. Know your
enemy.
Surroundings.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. If you know your enemy really good, it's like, well, maybe we should just have beers.
Well,
right?
That's just it, the art of war.
You like beer too?
I like beer. Yeah.
Why are we killing our
you
kids?
You like blowjobs? I like blowjobs.
We could just, no, you know what? No.
The war is off. That's it. Fire Nation, go home. We're going home.
But I'm getting a beer first. All right. We got excellent Brainy Meats this week. That was a great quote. All right. This one is from Charles Bukowski. I can't read it. Yeah, Bukowski. Quote, "We're all going to die. All of us. What a circus. That alone should make us love each other, but it doesn't. We are terrorized and flattened by trivialities." Trivialities?
Trivialities.
"We are eaten up by nothing." I like that.
Gotta love Bukowski.
Yeah. That's a smart thing a person said.
I'm still processing.
I know, I am too.
Say that again.
Yeah, okay. I was
going to
say.
Whenever you say flubba dub a word,
say it less dumb this time, okay. Could you?
Put the emphasis on the right syllable.
Quote, "We're all going to die." By the way, there's a cute kitty in this photo too. Everyone see the kitty?
That's what
drew me to the
Bukowski.
Quote.
Bukowski.
"We're all going to die, all of us. Every fucking one of us." He didn't add that part. "What a circus. That alone should make us love each other, but it doesn't. We are terrorized and flattened by trivialities." I don't know. "We are eaten up by nothing." Eaten up by nothing.
Mm-hmm. You know,
We allow ourselves to be eaten up by nothing.
Yeah, and I like that because, like, the first point that he makes there is like, we're all in the same fucking predicament.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, we're all, at the end of the day, in the same trenches. And you usually, when you're in the trenches with somebody, even if you don't like them, you're like, yeah, but we're in this shit together.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And, like, for whatever reason, we lose ourselves in the soup with that, where it's just like...
We're focusing on minutia way too often.
Yeah, we're tribal. You know, people are tribal. Uh-huh. And it doesn't matter at what level, you know, if you like the Seahawks and you like the 49ers, you know, it's comes from the whole, I think, you know, primate.
DNA
sure. instinctual, yeah. You know, we got to belong to a group, and the only way really to describe ourselves is by what we're not, you know.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's hard-coded in our DNA for, like, what we came from, but also the generations that went through. Like, if you don't belong to a tribe, you're dead.
Yeah.
You know,
well, if we have any,
or you're a slave, or you're, you know, any number of awful things. It's like, if you're not in the right tribe, you're fucked.
Yeah, and it doesn't matter if it's language or religion or your skin color or whatever group it is, or the Raiders and the Seahawks.
Yeah.
Very strange. And there's nothing that we've done through government or social programs, or there's very few things that have softened the tribalism. Mm-hmm. It's like there's a small percentage of people that really aren't that way, and I think that's it. But the rest of humanity is like, you don't look or sound or think like me, so I hate you. And I don't want you to win.
You got to admit, though, like, no matter how much you recognize that, there's still some very unique fucking great feeling you get from feeling like you're in the tribe.
Part
you know?
Of something.
Yeah, like you're part of the ship, part of the crew.
If it's a cool ship.
Like, if that wasn't the case, then, like, motorcycle clubs wouldn't be what they are, you know,
right?
Because like, it's like, oh, we're this. We all rallied around this. Mm-hmm. This is our shared identity, and fuck anybody that fucks with us and doesn't like it. And we've got each other's backs no matter what. It's like, yeah, on the face of it, it's like, well, that's tribalism. But when you're part of it, it's like, fuck, nothing feels really as good as this does. Mm-hmm. You know,
yeah,
you know,
that's right. I
learned something about myself recently that I'd like to share since this, you know, this.
Tell me about your mother.
I have spent most of my life thinking that I'm a loner. Mm-hmm. Somebody who's not, I jokingly call myself not a joiner.
Right.
Because I don't want to be part of, I don't want to sit at your table and eat.
I don't want to be in your club.
I don't want to be in any club that would have me.
And it's interesting because this is always just my whole mindset is I've always been this weirdo that didn't want to fit anywhere else, and I didn't strive to not fit. I just fucking didn't fit. But I've learned something about myself, and it's not that I don't want to be part of something. It's I don't want the expectations and the responsibility of being part of something.
Well, shit.
And that's something that I've discovered about myself. Is that it's not that I don't want to be part of something.
You just want to phone it in.
I just pretty much, yeah.
Is it because your dad didn't love you enough?
I don't want the expectations that are set by being part of something.
Okay.
Because individuals around you who are also part of something, whatever that something is, they have preconceived expectations of you.
Hmm.
And that's what I don't want.
And you're certain to disappoint.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, because I don't want to.
I feel like there's really...
I don't want to do it. I don't want to.
There's really no avoiding it at the end of the day, though. Speaking as a fellow misfit, mm-hmm. You know, it's like I have the capability to fit into most any group that I spend time around.
Yes.
And I know you and I have this in common. It's like I can chameleon my way into pretty much any group of people if I... am determined to do so.
Depends on how much energy and mental capacity you have for the day.
Right. Yeah. But if it comes down to just like where I naturally do and don't fit in, I kind of naturally don't completely fit in anywhere. It's just been a common theme in my life. But then I realized one day, I was like, oh, by not fitting in, those are my people.
Yes.
Right. It's like everybody else who doesn't fit in, it's like, oh, shit, I have a tribe anyway.
Well, you know by default. I do find interesting are the individuals that also don't fit in. They don't, because we all kind of come from the same weird vein of social structure, these individuals don't have preconceived expectations of me.
Mm.
We also don't have jackets.
Yeah, but pretty much, yeah. No jackets.
Which is a shame, because I might wear one.
I
would wear one.
I like our club. It's all right. Mm-hmm. Definitely. Last one. All right, this one comes from H.L. Mencken. Quote, the urge to save humanity is almost always a false front for the urge to rule, end quote. The urge to save humanity is almost always a false front for the urge to rule.
Mm-hmm.
Is fucking our world.
I'll save everybody because I'm the only one that can do it.
Yeah. I'm going to lecture you so hard. Yeah. It's like, I don't think, and I think you just like lecturing people.
And if you're not with the program, then off.
I would have
to
look it up along those lines, though. Yeah, there's a quote that, you know, I think he says, the best leader is the one most reluctant to lead.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can't remember who that is, but same lines. You know?
We started this thing called the Reasonablest Party. Mm-hmm. It's our political party, taking the piss out of it or whatever. But it's care for what you think is true and recognize that people that want to be in charge should not be in charge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that instinct to want to be in, tell you how to live your life. Because do you want to tell anybody how to live their life?
No, yeah.
Right. Yeah. Most normal people don't. So it's kind of like a little hummingbird feeder. For not hummingbirds, for cunts, for dirty, dirty. No.
Wow.
Not all politicians are cunts.
Image. I just pictured a bunch of like winged cunts flying into it.
Just having a little sip of nectar.
Just little roast beef wings.
Not to be confused with the bomb taco.
Bomb taco.
Well,
on that note, let's go to the end of the show, shall we?
Let's do it.
Now it's time to end the show, but we'll be back sometime in the future, yo.
Wait, what the fuck am I doing here?
Wrong studio, Dad.
Who the fuck are these folks?
Wrong studio, Dad.
None of you touch my beans.
All right, thank you so much for being here, Justin. We appreciate it. Hopefully we'll see some more people at Cruisers that might not have been there and stuff from our local folk.
Yeah.
Thank you to the Trusted Turd Triad, Don, Chris, and Bodie for doing all the stuff that you guys do behind the scenes. Our Trusted Turd Herders, all the people on the internet that are helping the Scatcast grow and smearing the poop everywhere you can, all over the windows, all over the bathrooms, everywhere you go.
What about those Reddit regulators?
Those Reddit regulators, Peege and Minibug?
Yeah.
We appreciate the hell out of you guys. If you want to have a fun conversation, go into Reddit. There's also Discord.
There is Discord.
Discord Dookie Slayer in there and all of the cast characters.
It's where you'll find me. It's where you'll find Aaron. It is literally the only place you'll find Will.
Yeah. Nobody, you guys just don't want to get anywhere past Discord. It's like, this is our little place on the internet. Fuck all
that. That's our dirty little hovel that we will not leave. You can't make us.
That's right. Thank you to the Scat Meme Army for continually making awesome memes every day, every week.
Yeah.
It's been awesome to see. I've got some meme cards going out here pretty soon.
Some
to those
meme-age.
Of you,
for you know sure. What else we got?
What?
We have a wiki.
Yes, dude. The Scat Wiki.
Mm-hmm.
And it's growing more and more impressive by the day.
Amazing.
It warms my heart that so many of you guys have been helping us do all this stuff, and that is a lot of work that they did. So much work. May 1st, Gunnar Halifax Interactive Scat Book is coming out. We're excited as fuck. There'll be a bunch of new cards there. of course, Scat Roast Coffee, where you get prizes inside! And not one, but two. Yes. Comes May 6th to all the patrons.
You can drink Scat Roast Coffee and then sit in your house and go,
it's the way it works. And Monique has picked two wonderful blends. There's Wake Up, Bitch. And there's Don't Be a Cunt. Available only at scatcast.com. May 6th for patrons, May 7th for everyone else. They've got gold. There's a... I just ordered them yesterday. They're very special cards that you'll find in there. They're double characters. Mm-hmm. So you'll have a Gunnar Halifax and a Dr. Schmoggy, a Dave and Angus, a Knight Rider and Airwolf, if you will. There's also a Victor Wembanyama and another special alien that you guys might like.
There's Sergeant Stubby, bro. Is there any fucking Sergeant Stubbies, bro?
There's a single Sergeant Stubby, yeah. And I made it in the 1980 Fleer. Yeah. 1985 Fleer basketball. Jordan's rookie card-like.
I will straight up frame a Sergeant Stubby card in a glass case.
It's coming for
display it in a place of honor above my mantle that I don't have.
I love it. You brought a Sergeant Stubby. That's one of the greatest gifts to the Scatverse of all time.
Yes.
Also in June, we've got the Can You Don't cards for Brian and Joe. We're working on those. They gave me their t-shirts today. So next week, if you're watching the show, the t-shirts that I will be cutting up and putting little squares on the cards will be the t-shirts that they wore in the episode that I recorded today with them. Mm-hmm. And they got armpit stink in it.
Nice.
And Joe's is by far the best because it's not his shirt. Mm-hmm. It's Cassie's shirt. Mm-hmm. And it was funny.
That's how you know it's authentic.
Did he nipped
out the whole show, baby.
So
the whole show.
Who's going to get the nip cuts, I wonder?
So tons of shit in the Scatverse. Again, we appreciate the hell out of you, Justin, for
being
here.
Thank you, guys. Yeah, it was great.
Definitely check out Cruisers if you're in the North Idaho, Washington area. and look for a Justin Vio card and a Cruisers card, perhaps. Mm-hmm. We'll see if that works in the future. I think that's going to do it. But we do have bonus stuff for you guys, for all of you patrons. Mm-hmm. We appreciate the hell of you. We're going to continue the conversation, probably talk video games in the Patreon. So, as always, we'll talk at you in the future.
It'll seem like the present.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Bye. It's just a ride. Whoa, oh, it's just a ride.
Bing, bing, bong.
You did it.
You did.